All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if Le'Veon Bell's holdout has backfired.
And if losing is starting to take its toll on LeBron, sounds like it. But we start every day with a Whitlock, so what you got today, big dog?
This is where we're at now, Marcellus. Ty Montgomery is a victim. He blew Green Bay's chance to upset the Rams on Sunday with a selfish act. He left the locker room without explaining his actions. Ty Montgomery fumbled the ball. He came out of the end zone when he could have fair caught the ball and left the game in Aaron Rodgers' hand. But now, Ty Montgomery is the victim. How dare any of his teammates publicly question his selfish decision-making? How dare anyone in the media question his motives? Ty Montgomery is a victim. Listen to what he said Monday.
We talk about being brothers, we talk about being family and keeping things in-house, this, that, and the other, and that's not what happened. I don't know, maybe that's what they do in their family, but that's not what I do in mine. No one ever said anything to me. No one ever came to me. So I'm thoroughly disappointed in the speculation and just the backlash that I have to deal with now. Because now we're talking about my character. We're not even talking about the fumble anymore. We're talking about my character. I got to deal with outside noise as a professional football player on a weekly basis. We all do. That's something we all have to deal with. The most disappointing thing is the fact that now it's inside. It's tough for me to trust anyone now. Guys talking about how they can trust me. It's tough for me to trust anyone now.
He also said he's pissed off at the state of humanity. Well, so am I. Because no one is man enough to raise a hand and say, my bad, I screwed that up. What I did was foolish and selfish. I cost the team, and it won't happen again. Just say that. There's too much pride in victimhood in modern America and modern sports. Being a victim now is an accomplishment worthy of celebration and admiration. Get stomped in a tennis match, lose your composure, and blame it on a sexist chair umpire. Get beat out by Blaine Gabbert. Light your career on fire with an unthought-out protest and reinvent yourself as a political martyr. Ty Montgomery cost the Packers a football game Sunday, but his teammates are the bad guys. He can't trust them anymore. Rather than blasting his teammates, Montgomery should have been begging his teammates to trust him again. He's the one who allowed frustration over his limited role to provoke him into making a terrible decision.
I wanted to make a play. I wasn't playing very much, and I wasn't able to make a play, and I was frustrated about that. I don't fully understand what my role is right now, what I'm supposed to be doing, how I'm supposed to help this team, and it's frustrating when I want to help the team, and I get limited opportunities, and it didn't happen on that play.
I said yesterday on this show that Montgomery made a business decision. I stand by it. He's in the final year of his rookie contract. He's Green Bay's third-string tailback. He just acknowledged that he's frustrated with his role. He feels entitled. He feels like the Packers owe him an opportunity.
There's a lot of stuff that's not true that's causing me to have to deal with, you know, false accusations about my character, perceptions about my character. I've never been one to throw teammates under the bus. You guys know, if you guys ever ask me questions about teammates, I always deflect it. I don't like it. So it's very disappointing, especially as a guy that's jeopardized the length of his career, the amount of money he can make in his career, in the middle of a season, being asked to do multiple things all the time. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Yep, Ty Montgomery's explanation and reaction to his fumble are even worse than the fumble itself. He had a chance on Monday to swallow the blame for the loss and his decision. He instead bashed his teammates and gave the controversy new life. He's handled this horribly. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. Marcellus, I'll start with you. I think this explanation, worse than even the fumble itself, he's handled this horribly.
Props to you, James Cameron, for the way you produced the hell out of that Whitlock. I mean, I'm sitting there like, this is Oscar worthy, man. You kept going in and out, sound bites, so respect to that. There are a couple edits I would like to add to something that you put out there, and you put out there in an eloquent manner. I respect that. I can't even disagree with you in totality, but I will go in here and slice and dice a little bit.
Go ahead.
One is, has anyone ever thought that he left that locker room and actually he left to take the high road and protect a coach by the name of Mike McCarthy, who didn't declare that he should have stayed in the end zone by mandate.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. And so, you know, as a player who's on a contract year making a business decision, I can't out-coach. I'll take the L, but I have to make sure that I stay on brand. I make sure that I say the right thing in messaging. I don't have that calculator yet. Maybe I dip. Okay, it sounds like a weasel move, but maybe that's a part of his thought process. But let's go to the part that I think that he is absolutely correct in, and you shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater in this respect. He's establishing borders. He's basically saying, look, for all you critics out there who were coming at the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line for talking about Le'Veon Bell's money, at least they put their names on it and put their faces to it. I got some bums in my locker room who can't even walk up to me as brethren and say, what it do? And I know if I was in that locker room, no matter what I did, I thought the fraternity is going to respect each other as members of it. What colors and what jerseys do anonymous players wear? I ask you that question again. So
they make split decisions, too.
Okay.
And the guys talking made a split decision to call him out in after the frustration of that game.
In summation, I will say this, Whitlock. Establish borders, because if not, you enable a culture that leads to a malice in the palace. Establish borders because you can't be talking about my family because I made a bad football play. Okay, you can't be talking about my character. Oh, you want to? That's fine. But there are borders to this conversation. I play a game. I make decisions. There's consequences. Outside this game, please understand your passion doesn't allow you total freedom into my life and into my family and to any other dynamic outside of football.
Get off Twitter.
I respect him for establishing those borders.
I don't mind his response at all. I'm always at odds with the anonymous media writer, the anonymous player. I think it's cowardly. Mm. And when you look at his frustration, it's not a victimist role. It's truth. It's flat out truth. I think
I can't trust my teammates anymore because one person.
Understand this. I think if that doesn't happen, he gets up and because he admitted to the fact that, you know, my instructions were the same as they always were. Yeah. It always have been on a return. If it's in the end zone, let it go. If it's not, I made a split second in game decision because I wanted to try to make a play. You keep spinning it as a business decision, yeah. But in the middle of the game, guys aren't thinking, oh, let me see how I can get my money on this play. No, it's I want to make a play because he admitted to being frustrated. I get that. And your Whitlock, you were on a lot of these points, but you forget to throw the teammate aspect of it, of why he's frustrated now, what he's talking about. And
money.
No. When you're in a locker room and somebody's jabbing at you, it's different when I can hear Whitlock jabbing at me.
I did all these different things for the team and sacrifice money.
It's different when you can hear and see somebody like yourself.
I don't want to do that anymore.
Go ahead, Tony.
I want to win the game and not let Aaron Rodgers do it.
You know, as always, as always, man. It's never just one person's fault. I mean, you've got to give the coach, the special teams coach, Mike McCarthy, that's his responsibility. Let him know. Communicate. I don't think that would have happened in other winning organizations, a la the New England Patriots. Mm. But he has majority of the responsibility. His response right there, all he's doing is making it worse. I think he's giving away his power. Own it. Take it back. Put it on me. Don't say I'm the victim. I've been doing this and this and this, and I'm trying to gain the respect, and I'm trying to make a play. I agree with you. Just shut up and say I messed up, and there's nothing wrong with that. As his teammate, I would be like, you know what, Ty? I know you were just trying to make a play, and I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. I want to retract what I said yesterday. Cut him. I wouldn't have cut him. That was wrong for me to say.
Yes.
But now looking at this, where do you go from here now?
Hold on, Tony. First of all, you're not the same teammate that's going to say respect, big dog, because you owned up to it, because you're anonymous. So you're not even going to come up to me. Who are you in this locker room that had the complaints against me in the first place?
Exactly.
Those anonymous players is where this fire started. It wasn't Mike McCarthy versus Ty Montgomery. It wasn't even the play. We all get it. Aaron Rodgers more than likely would have got him in field goal position, more than likely. Hopefully, Crosby makes that kick, because in Detroit, we saw how that went.
Yeah.
And more than likely, they win and they put a blemish on the Rams. However, this became a firestorm is because one of his own started to say, hey, man, we have a problem with what you did, and we understand it was a business decision. But all he's saying is, One, y'all went too far with it. And two, who are these guys that are talking about me?
Just as a journalist, Marcellus, sometimes the only way to get the truth out is to grant somebody some anonymity.
Yeah, that's real.
That's the only way as a journalist. And so I'm sure Mike Silver's in there and like he wants to reflect what the actual thoughts are in that locker room. And the guy in that locker room was like, man, I don't want to put my name on it. But
so why say it?
Thank you.
Okay.
Then you don't, you shut
that's
your
what
mouth.
He thinks.
It don't matter. You shut your mouth because you always, in this profession and in sport, you have to always put yourself. I never like to show up my quarterback. The reason why, I felt like I was very confident in what my abilities were and what I was going to be able to do on the football field. But there would come a time where I would drop a ball. And I knew that that was going to happen over the term of my career. So I never wanted to show my quarterback up every blue moon when the ball was not where I wanted it to be, because there will come a time when it's my turn to be looked at like, what now? And that's all I'm saying. When you have an anonymous person in-house, it's just like somebody in here saying something about you. You would have a problem with it.
Hey, yeah, I really would.
You guys are really sensitive right now.
Hold on,
you guys are really sensitive. Are you guys on Twitter? Are you guys on Twitter?
Yes, I am.
You know what trolls are, right?
Oh yeah, I love okay, them. I'm a troll.
Energy man. So you'll go out there and you'll be like, oh, nice suit, Whitlock, or you look like a fool, whatever it is. Why would you? So people are going to do that. People are going to talk trash in your own family. He said, my family, we don't do it. I got a couple people in my family that might say a little something behind my back. Nothing wrong with it. Doesn't mean I don't love
it. But Tony, you know the code.
I'm just saying, get over it.
And you can't say that to this side of the table. First of all, this is consecutive days. We had this divide. We could keep this rolling. This is a dude who retired and put his name on his criticism of his former quarterback.
Absolutely.
I mean, he didn't say anonymous teammate of Aaron Rodgers. He went there
and
said,
Hold on. I got a cookie. Let me give it to
you. let me get that. Let me get that.
You know we're not going to fight over them cookies. You better not. Stop.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I would never do that. But at the same time, if somebody does that to me, I don't have to read the trolls. I don't have to feed into the negativity, the energy vampire who is that. Maybe it's Aaron Rodgers. It could even be Aaron Rodgers. Him and Silver are friends. They both went to Berkeley. I used to have a good relationship with Silver because of the Berkeley connection. Yeah. I'm not saying it is Aaron Rodgers, but I'm just saying I don't care. I'm going to keep doing my job. I'm going to own up to it, and I'm moving on for the betterment of the team. Because now you're saying divisive stuff right now.
And so now when the team comes back on Wednesday, Tuesday's the day off, there's going to be another round of questions. Now, what did you think about what Ty Montgomery had to say? What's your response to that? And if he had just swallowed it and eaten it and taken responsibility, the story goes away. He gave the story new life and new energy. And again, I'm tired of athletes. In sports, there are no victims. There's only men responsible for their actions.
I agree with
that. And for these guys, oh my God, my teammates now, I don't trust them anymore. Well, do they trust you to do the right thing at crunch time? That's the question. All this little talking behind each other's back, that doesn't win or lose football games. Your actions on the field, whether they can trust you at game time when between the lines, that's what matters most.
What parallel universe are you living in where you thought that they were going to show up on Wednesday and all things were just going to be status quo? Hold on. Two of y'all already sold out one of your teammates.
Thank you. And
even if I'm not one of those two or I'm not Ty Montgomery, I'm sitting there like, who's selling people out around these parts? Because guess what? Next weekend,
We got the tape. Todd Montgomery did.
But somebody's going to make the mistake next weekend. And guess what? When Crosby missed all those kicks, imagine anonymous players were sitting there saying, cut the dude. Go after him. He wasn't
That's
even
more
focused.
Understandable.
He wasn't even focused
That's
the night
before. If he had dropped the ball in the end zone, people would have. That's understandable. Those mistakes happen. We're talking about a decision and where the motives have to be questioned. I don't blame his teammates for doing that.
And you my teammate?
Wow.
Man, we're live.
For coming out of the end zone today. Wow. Y'all act like y'all never seen anybody do something selfish in a football game.
And you act like you don't say everything that you've had to say about me, praise or criticism, has come from you directly, whether it's text, conversation. You have never went around the corner and said, oh, it's not from Whitlock. But guess what? And it's coming from Whitlock. And that's what I'm saying.
I don't believe in anonymous sources as it relates to me because I want credit for everything that I say.
going forward, what they need to do, if I'm Mike McCarthy, how do you fix this? You have Ty Montgomery. If I was Ty, I would want to go up in front of that locker room with my teammates and address them and be like, look, maybe some of you guys said some stuff. And but if not, I'm willing to let it go. I screwed up too. Let's just move on because we got a long season ahead of us. We got a really good football team. We got a big game coming up Sunday night. I'm just saying I would put
let me
this
tell
to
you
bed.
How Mike
I'd
McCarthy. Let me tell you how Mike Stop. McCarthy just put it to bed.
Do that.
Let me tell you how Mike McCarthy just put it to bed.
Cut him, right?
No, he just got traded to the Ravens. They've put it to bed. Ty Montgomery handled this poorly. He threw gas on the fire yesterday, and they moved on from it. He went and attacked his teammates and questioned them. The Packers agree with me. Tony Gonzalez agrees with me. The dude handled this horribly, and they had to move on from it.
Man, that's sad. I wanted what Tony said. I wanted him to go to the front of the room, and I wanted Mike McCarthy to say, hey, we a real team right here.
And whoever
who are those two anonymous
y'all
dudes?
Y'all come up here, too.
Bring your butt up here, too, and let's talk this
through. Because regardless, hey, it's divisive.
Let me ask y'all something. Let me ask y'all something.
Now we still got an issue.
Yeah, we still got
an
issue.
We still got two snitches up in here, homie. Two snitches.
You can win with snitches. You can't win with people making terrible decisions, selfish decisions on a football game at the end of the game when you got Aaron Rodgers.
But did he get traded because of the fumble or did he get traded because of the way he reacted?
The cover-up is always worse than the crime. The cover-up is always worse than the crime.
If he come out and say that, then I think he'd still be on that team right now. But he shouldn't have responded that way. I wouldn't have responded that way. But
I don't like it, but I'm not in charge. I mean, it's funny to me how we give passes to certain players because what they've done in the past was more than enough. Mason Crosby got a huge pass because he had a bad day.
And he acknowledged it, and he's a Pro Bowl level player. He's not third string.
You're making this point.
Thank you. There's no way to not acknowledge it because nobody came out and said, Mason lost the game for us.
And they should have
because
he
Because Mason said it. He didn't need anybody else.
Ty Montgomery, he didn't even get a chance to say it.
Because he ran home and ducked the media after the game.
It wasn't just that he ran home and ducked the media. Even if no one ever said anything, I think he handles this completely different because now he has nothing to talk about internal divisiveness of guys not trusting one another in-house.
Look, or selling out his coach, who we know didn't tell him to stay in the end zone in the first place.
This is happening live. Ian Rappaport just reported he's been traded to the Ravens. I guarantee you, this is my journalistic instincts, I guarantee you Ty Montgomery asked to be traded as well. He wanted out of there. Because not man enough to be accountable for his actions, and instead of dealing with that situation, instead of going to his teammates face-to-face, you got a problem with me, he wants to go into the media and throw gas on this situation rather than take responsibility for a dumb decision. Mm.
You guys do acknowledge that Mason Crosby did come out afterwards say, I lost the game.
I love that.
It's all on me.
I love that.
And we probably all have done that, too. We messed up in games.
But put that on me.
You know
what allows him to do that? Even more so, and I think he would have done it either way because Mason, that's just who he is. But when his quarterback comes up to him after the game, after he makes that kick, the last kick, where his coach then allows him to kick a field goal because he knows I'm going to need him later on, he allows him that opportunity to make it right. Then his quarterback, the leader of that team, comes and embraces him. It's all good, man. Like, you had a bad day. Did Ty Montgomery feel that same respect?
What did he do? What did Aaron Rodgers do when he fumbled it? He looked at another player and was like, this fool. I mean, come on, Aaron Rodgers.
He took the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hand. Aaron Rodgers ain't supposed to go over there and comfort him. He's supposed to look at him like, man, you crazy. That was a crazy decision. We got to move on.
Yes, we
do. I'm right. Just like I knew I was right. He's out of there. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Time for some big stories. Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings are back. Let's start in the NFL, where the trade deadline is today. And we've already seen a couple of big trades involving wide receivers. First, the AFC South leading Texans traded a fourth-round pick to Denver for Demaryius Thomas, while the Eagles just gave Carson Wentz another weapon, sending a third-round pick to Detroit for Golden Tate. I happen to like the Demaryius Thomas move the best. Mm. I love giving Deshaun Watson another receiving weapon. They lost Will Fuller. Pair him with DeAndre Hopkins, and I like what the Texans are doing. Not a bad move for the Eagles getting Golden Tate, but I think Demaryius Thomas has more upside.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is a true number one when things are stable, when he's properly motivated. A guy who had five straight 1,000-yard seasons, including three over 1,400 yards plus and 10 touchdowns. So the thing that I love about it is he's going to get with DeAndre Hopkins, who didn't have stability at the quarterback position, who didn't have the proper offensive line that gave his quarterback time, who didn't always have a running game and still put up numbers. So when you're around a guy like that, D. Hopkins going to look at Demaryius and say, bro, I don't know what's been going on with your roller coaster career, but it needs to stabilize and you need to ball out. Will Fuller's gone. You're going to come in here. No excuses. I produce regardless. It's your turn and get back to greatness.
For me, I like the Philadelphia move. I like Golden Tate. The reason why, when I look at this Philadelphia Eagles team, they just extended and added to not only their running game, but obviously their passing game. Golden Tate is a running back playing wide receiver. He's a big, heavy yards after the catch guy. You put the ball in his hands quickly or down the field, he's a playmaker that can make the ball, that can make plays, like I said, off screens, extensions of the running game. You get the ball out of Carson Wentz's hand quick, fast, slot guy that they trust more than even a Nelson Aguilar, and he adds that stability. He has always made plays in Seattle, Detroit. Calvin Johnson retires, no problem. Why? We have Golden Tate, and obviously they acquired Marvin Jones Jr., but I like what the Philadelphia Eagles did.
Yeah, Philly, I thought they were going to go get a running back. You know, I think that was something that might be a little bit more needed. And although Golden Tate is going to add beautifully with them. But Demaryius Thomas, like you said, Will Fuller's gone. Now you're playing with DeAndre Hopkins out there. You don't have to be the guy. You don't have to be that number one guy. Kind of like Emmanuel Sanders, they were both kind of playing off of each other. Yeah. But that big body of his, especially with the way Deshaun Watson plays. I love how he gets out of that pocket, playing with a quarterback that can make plays with his legs and allows me to get open after the play breaks down. I think Demaryius Thomas is going to excel at something like that.
Look, the Eagles got to deal with the juggernaut Los Angeles Rams in the NFC. The other reason why this move excites me more in Houston is because the AFC, to me, feels more wide open. And now, if I'm the Houston Texans and Bill O'Brien and that organization, I'm like, okay, I can't go weapon for weapon with Kansas City, but I'm a lot closer offensively. And on the other side, I got J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney. To me, the Texans and their move says, we going Super Bowl or bust this year. We're all in.
Yeah, it's always a relative experience based on who your opponents are. And if I just made a short list of NFC teams, Rams, Saints, Panthers, yeah, Seahawks, Vikings, Redskins. If I'm the Eagles, I'm behind all those teams right now. You look at the AFC, Chiefs, Pats, Steelers, Bengals, maybe if you want to go. I mean, like you said, up top right now, it's wide open. Obviously, the Chiefs and the Patriots, because they're always there, seem like the gold standard. But it's wide open for those guys to make a move, and I think Houston can.
I think both of these teams made a great decision to add to their offenses where it was needed. I like Demaryius Thomas, and I like what they're doing because the AFC South, wide open, and I think they are now the front runners to win that division with adding him. They still have issues with offensive line. The reason why, you have a quarterback that got to get out the pocket all the time because he can't survive in the pocket because of the offensive line play. But what Golden Tate provides, the Eagles thrive off of RPOs, which I hate that, but it's run pass. You can extend your running game now because you have a guy who you can just get the ball in the hands of and he will make things happen quickly and effectively.
All right, to the Rams, who are the only team still undefeated, but they'll face their toughest test yet this week against the Saints in New Orleans. Drew Brees and crew just moved to 6-1 with a win over the Vikings in Minnesota. But they may not be L.A.'s only competition in the NFC. Cam Newton and the Panthers have won 4 of 5, including dominating the Ravens in their top-ranked defense this past Sunday. I'm someone that think when I look around at the biggest threats to the juggernaut Rams, I think it's Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, not Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. I like Carolina's defense. I love Kuechly and Thomas Davis. But more than anything, I'm just telling you, Cam Newton, to me, is playing at an MVP level. He's playing better than he did when he was the MVP. Norv Turner has brought out the best in Cam Newton. Cam Newton is very motivated right now. I think he's looked around the league and all this money these quarterbacks are making. And, I don't know what his contract situation is, but I'm telling you, Cam Newton wants to be in position to probably be the first $40 million man a year, something like that.
Yeah.
He is balling out of control. I think they are the biggest threat.
I disagree. I think it's the Saints. And I use Aaron Rodgers, the most talented quarterback in our league. I use his words to tell you what I'm talking about. Going into the Rams game, he said, we have to put up 30 points. If we do, we can win that game. During the game, he said post-game, we our defense was playing great, and we didn't capitalize on those opportunities in the moment. And what did that lead to? If we would have put up 30 points, we would have won that game. A lot of stress points for a guy before the game and during the game and talking about opportunities wasted. What does that mean? You need an offense that's going to go out there and not put that unnecessary pressure on itself. That's the Saints. The Saints won't walk into a game and say, if we score 30, we win. They're like, we're going to score 30. The Panthers, on the other hand, is going to sit there and say, yeah, we need to score 30 and we'll see what happens. And I think that's why you have to say the tie goes to the Saints. Plus, the matchups, Kamara and Ingram versus Gurley. Okay, you go which way you want to go. You got Michael Thomas, Brandon Cooks. Got quiet over there. Yeah. Drew Brees, Jared Goff. Okay, hey, Saints. Sean Payton and Sean McVay. I mean, my point is they can match up with this team and they have the firepower to go out there and put up the points.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Looking at the Saints, Drew Brees, the way he's playing with the rules that are predicated around the offense making plays and putting them points up, who better than the Saints? They've been doing this for a long time. He's had five 5,000-yard seasons in his career. Only one other quarterback has done it once. You know, Tom Brady, I think Peyton Manning. They've only done it one time. This guy's used to this. And with the rules and the change, he's even putting up even better numbers. It's almost 80% completion rate right now, and his QBR is through the roof. So I just don't – it helps to score points. You look at the Super Bowl last year where all these yards were put up. That's the formula for success. Now, I like the Rams' defense. Don't get me wrong. They got the best player on the planet with Aaron Donald. But I still think that with the Saints, with that offense, they're going to go back and forth. They can go punch for punch with the Rams.
Jason, I don't want to leave you on an island by yourself, but I got to, man. I think the Carolina Panthers are the scarier team. But if I'm going with who I trust, give me the Saints. Because as you alluded to, we already know they can score points. And when I look at their secondary, yes, they have issues there. But I feel like Drew Brees can overcome what my secondary will give up. When I look at Cam Newton, and I love the way he's playing, I trust their defense. I don't necessarily know if this will be sustainable all the way through. It's
Cam
always
the defense.
The offense.
Offense.
The offense as a whole. And I just like what I see out of Drew Brees. They've always done it. This is nothing new to him. He has a running game. He has a pass rush, a defense that can get me the ball back. It's hard to go against the New Orleans Saints with the way they're playing, but the Panthers are scary.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined by Tony Gonzalez and Greg Jennings. Let's move to Pittsburgh.
I'll stay in L.A.
Where all the Le'Veon Bell speculation has quieted down a bit this week, and it could be because Bell's backup, James Conner, has done enough to shut everyone up. Conner has 9 rushing touchdowns, 599 rushing yards on the year, good for second and third in the league, respectfully. Bell clearly thought holding out would prove his value, but it appears to be doing just the opposite. There was a moment 3 or 4 weeks ago, week 4, James Conner runs for like 9 yards, Steelers lose. Jeremy Fowler tweets out, Le'Veon Bell is going to be reporting soon. And that's when it was peak Le'Veon. He had won the negotiations, the holdout had worked. And then the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks have happened. Steelers can't lose. James Conner looks like the second coming of Franco Harris. And I think he's blown this negotiation. This guy's he may sit out all – he's never getting this $14 million back. And I don't know if he's going to get the $40, $50 million in guaranteed that he thinks he's going to get this offseason.
Wrong.
Think he's going to get the money?
Yeah, he's going to get this money. A few reasons why. One, the better James Conner looks in his offense, the greater Le'Veon Bell looks in his absence. Because is James Conner better than Le'Veon Bell at playing the game of football? I thought so. No one says yes to that, right? And now you start to imagine if he were there getting those same reps, whoa, what would happen then? So a team out there is thinking that way. Maybe not all 31 other teams, but some team is saying, ooh, they're special with James Conner. They will be insane with Le'Veon Bell. Two, if you look at it and listen to it, every single person says right now Todd Gurley's the best running back in football, right? And then listen to the end of their sentence. Well, Le'Veon Bell is not playing this year. Well, with an asterisk, because Le'Veon Bell is not participating. And that lets you know his value hasn't diminished. So James Conner, continue to ball. I think Le'Veon probably, he was coming back week 7. He's like, wait a minute. This youngster is out there getting it. And I could get my rest. Wow, it satisfies both situations for him and for me. So I think
not my accountant.
No, he's million. Oh, he lost $9-10 million. He's paying the price to get that money, but at the same time, I think he's going to get that. There's one team out there thinking that same way.
Yeah. Sometimes in situations like this, it's okay that both parties win, and I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the Pittsburgh Steelers sticking to their guns, and they're winning because James Conner has produced. But you look at Le'Veon Bell, he's not concerned about what James Conner is doing. He knows who he is. He's not taking those hits. He's still believing that I'm going to get paid, and I think that he will. I don't think that he'll get Todd Gurley money, but he'll come close somewhere around there with somebody else that, to your point, is going to say, man, if James Conner is doing this, we know who Le'Veon Bell is and what he can provide, and for our team, oh, give me that guy.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell, he will get paid, and I think he'll be the highest paid running back in the NFL next year. There's no doubt about it. It's got to go that way. And like you said, both teams won here. There's no long answer here. I think Le'Veon Bell accomplished what he wanted to. But here's my question now. When he does come back, we'll say that, what's his role on this team now? Does he want to play? Is it going to be more of a distraction than an addition?
No, like, I think this benefits him.
So what does he do?
Because now they're gonna be, well, we're not going to just insert you in front of James Conner. He's like, cool, I can be here. You feel me? I can be here. I still don't have to take these hits. Cool. I'm fine with that.
That sounds great, but the emotional context of being in that moment, sitting on the end of the bench and watching James Conner go, the competitor in him is going to be like, I got to get out there.
But what about this, kind of like with Earl Thomas, where he got hurt, you know, he wanted his contract negotiations. If you're him and you got this guy and you're splitting time, do you even want to play? Or do you like, look, I came this long, I already lost $9 million. I'm not going to risk $4 million or whatever, how much left he can make this year for that big contract that will be there next year.
Why do y'all think he's coming back?
That's what I'm saying. If I were him, I probably wouldn't even come back
just,
at this point.
Just to get the accrued season, I mean, whatever that does for you, you have to come back for that accrued season. Now, we're in that two-week window where, okay, we have your rights if you signed a tender. And then going forward, we got 2 weeks to have you on our roster unpaid. And then after that, I think he shows up. And he's better than James Conner, so it will be his own volition if he sits behind Conner or if he wants to flex and say, I'll take a little risk for the team in a Super Bowl run and go out there.
I think that would be silly of him.
Exactly.
It would.
If he's done this already to this extent in this degree,
yeah.
I will come back, keep the young pup in. He's doing a great job.
But how do you play that out? Pragmatically, you can't walk up to Tomlin and say, I'm not back.
No, like, you're not going to say that.
I said this is going to be tricky when he gets back, if he comes back. Otherwise, if I were him, I'd just hold out for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
He must be single. Because I'm saying, if he had a wife, no way $855,000 a week
is
just going away. He must be single. Good for you, Le'Veon. Do what you feel. All right, to London, where the Jaguars dropped to 3-5 with a loss to the Eagles Sunday. But Philly wasn't Jacksonville's only opponent across the pond, with four Jags defensive backs getting arrested early Saturday morning after skipping out on a $64,000 tab at a nightclub. Reportedly, the players thought their drinks were on the house and ended up spending 9 hours in custody after things got physical between them and club security. All right, I'm going to try to step out of this. I want to hear you three football players. Is this to me looks like a bad look, man. You out kicking it 2 days before the game. This is a bad look for the players and Doug Marrone.
For me, look, these situations when they occur, and it don't happen all the time. I mean, they're 32 teams out there, and they all got a Friday night and no curfew. It's rare that we hear these stories, but this is just a case of when good intentions can go awfully wrong.
What were the good intentions?
Just to hang out, just to chill out on a Friday with no curfew and be a grown man in the NFL and kind of live in the
strip
spoils.
Club at 4 a.m.
That's kind of early. Coach said no curfew. He didn't say 4 a.m. curfew. Like, look, I'm just going to talk from real experience and not this old air-conditioned studio and you know, preaching down to everyone. Friday was the day to go get it early in my career, and everybody did it. I've had teammates miss practice on Saturday. I had teammates miss a playoff game. Had a teammate get beat up, showed up. The practice coach said, disappear, because we don't want to answer these questions of what happened to you on a Friday night. Then the medical evidence came out and showed, follow me here, that the night before is not the most important night of rest. It said two nights before, because if you mess up the night before, your body can run off adrenaline and you can just pull the all-nighter and get it. It said the night before. So then in the league, my latter years, we pushed it back to Thursday. Thursday was the night to go get it. Friday, chill out. Saturday, obviously, you got curfew. So I'm not going to go too hard on these cats because this is a normal activity in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not going hard on it anyway because these are all adults. They're going to make their own decision. And we have all been on teams where guys stay out beyond all night, all night, all morning, and come straight to the facility and still do what they need to do. It just went wrong for them because of what they thought was on the house was not on the house.
Right.
That's the only issue there.
You know, when I played for the Kansas City Chiefs, we had Herman Edwards, and he's back. I'm going to teach you like a man. I'm going to treat you like a man. And I remember as a teammate, I was like, you can't do that with some of these guys because they don't know how to respond. They don't know how to have self-regulate. I blame the coaching staff for the Jacksonville Jaguars two nights before the game, and you're in London. I know it was like us. When I went to Atlanta, we'd go out there on a Friday if we played a West Coast team. We had a curfew. You know, you had to be home by 12 o'clock. And speaking of Herman Edwards, he said, if you're a true player, then nothing happens good after 12 o'clock. Get everything that you got to get done before 12 o'clock. I don't understand why they are even out on that time of night. But at the same time, when I was younger, I ain't gonna lie either. Friday night, I used to go get home. But I always get home around 1:30, 2 o'clock at the latest, and still go out there and catch some touchdowns.
It's in KC, brother. Buffalo, I got home at 1:02. When I was in San Diego, straight to the facility, baby.
I will say this too, though, because we had the Ty Montgomery situation. Barry Church, you owned it. That's what I'm talking about. Said I'm responsible for my actions. I take full responsibility, way to own it.
And look, be real, Tony. In London, it may be 4 o'clock. My body clock is 10 o'clock at the crib. I know I walked in the office before. Yes. I was like, hey, coach, you know what time it is at the crib now. I'm okay. I'm going to be all right. It's the body clock thing.
In Green Bay, I would imagine you were in by 10.
Man, hey, look, I was in before 10. I was married. I was never out.
Married in Green Bay? Oh, yeah. That's no life.
All right, thank you, Greg, Tony. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Time to put on our thinking caps. We're joined by NBA champion Dante Jones. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Columbia grad, Marcellus here. So
thank you.
We're going to take a deeper look at some big issues in sports. All right, we got a special cap for Marcellus.
Nothing for you.
Darnell, bring out the cap for... For Marcellus.
I don't get a cap. I don't get a hat. I don't get nothing.
Duke grad.
You know what? I'm going to bring me something next time.
Yeah. You should, Duke.
The Ivy League of the South over there at Duke. All right. Let's move to the NBA, where LeBron James made waves this week, donning a hat supporting Texas Democratic Senate candidate Beto O'Rourke before a road game in San Antonio. It's hardly the first time LeBron has waded into political waters, making numerous public statements about President Trump in recent months and campaigning for Hillary Clinton back in 2016. But LeBron isn't the only NBA player whose political stances have made him polarizing. According to the market research firm Morning Consult, a new survey names four NBA players among the most politically polarizing celebrities, with LeBron 5th, Steph Curry 15th, KD 19th, and flat earther Kyrie Irving, 25th.
Hey, man.
These four NBA players were the only athletes named on this list. All right, guys, I think it's a bit of a mistake for NBA players to dive this deep and attach their brands to politics. Politics is the most divisive thing we have in American history. It's a rough, rough sport. It's the roughest sport we play. It's more hard-hitting, and there's probably more CTE in politics than in all the National Football League. And I just don't understand why athletes would want to be this polarizing, wading into politics. I think it's a mistake.
I think it's smart business. I think especially if you read the tea leaves and you see the sign of the times saying that polarization is profitable. Think about it. All the guys on this list and gals are all hyper successful, uber successful, next level successful. That the one commonality when you read that list, I'm like, superstars. And then I start to look at athletes in particular and starting to look at sports. I'm like, who makes the most money in athletics? Floyd Mayweather, polarizing. Not for political protests necessarily, but just polarizing. So what's become synonymous is divisiveness and polarization, which has led to profits. I am not upset at the athletes or the entities that are allowing these athletes to have these platforms, because at the end of the day, it means more money and more success and more adoration for these athletes, no matter how divisive it is.
Well, number one, the athletes that we just showed, they all have their own shoes, so they're a bigger brand than most any other athlete right now. However, athletes now are more informed and have values and have beliefs, and they want to change the world. They want to be remembered for more than just playing the sport that they played as a child. They evolve into men that want to put their mark on the country that they believe in and the people that they believe in, and they can be wrong. I don't think that once we attach ourselves to a political party or a person that we're attached to them for forever. No, LeBron tweeted about his speech, the Beto speech, which was an inclusive speech. It was a well-thought-out speech, but it
Which
hit.
Speech? You talking about the one about Kaepernick?
The one about the kneeling. Yeah. The one about kneeling, and he gave some information and had an informative speech on a topic that was near and dear to LeBron's heart. So this wasn't the first time that he spoke about Beto. And I think that it's good for our culture, because there are kids looking up to these athletes, and they're showing that they're real people, that they're just not about the dollar. They're not about the shoe that they're selling you or the game. They're showing that they're full, well-rounded people. And I think this is helping our society, where kids need to be more informed, need to vote, need to come out and change the country that we believe in.
Here's what my take is. Like you said, athletes are more informed. I'm not so sure. I think they believe they know more. They're more attached to social media and a Twitter level of understanding of certain events. But what I think athletes are just more famous and far more wealthy than they were in the past. And fame and wealth are a dangerous cocktail for me. And fame and wealth, to me, a lot of times, you can go from the highest office to the lowest office, fame and wealth undermine, to me, your intellectual evolution. And we seem to think the reverse, that somehow being famous and wealthy makes you more thoughtful and smarter than everybody else. I don't buy that.
I don't believe that. And that would be like saying that all our opinions on this desk do not matter. Just because me and Marcellus played a sport, our opinion does not matter. Yeah. Like everyone's opinion matters. It's saying only politicians' opinion matter. Just because they have more information, they may not be as informed as a normal American. Athletes are Americans. Athletes have values. They have beliefs. And I think that just because you're famous does not mean that you should not be able to just speak your mind and say what you believe in. And if it comes back to bite you, it does, but you're not supposed to be perfect.
Yeah, it's weird that that dangerous cocktail you talk about, I heard it in different lanes of our existence. So the cocktail of wealth and fame usually undermines, as you said, maybe some of your depth of knowing this. Mm-hmm. There was a time where it was a dangerous cocktail to be beautiful because they said, probably you don't have the best personality, you know, because, hey, why work on
it's been
the
a
inside?
For me. It's been a problem for me. It has. I know it's exactly
it
what
is
you're
a problem
about.
It's a problem for you. Yeah. You're right, the beauty. So it's funny that cocktail has... we've come to know that not everyone fits into that grouping, but here's a dangerous question or a dangerous statement to make, that athletes don't know politics, so therefore, how do you know that the athlete doesn't know politics? And I'm not around LeBron 24/7. I don't know his reading materials. I don't know what he's doing when he's not Instagramming about some new rap CD. Who knows what he's doing in that spare time? But we all have that spare time. Maybe he is giving it food for thought.
Here's my point, though. I'm not saying that we should dismiss their opinions. Mm-hmm. I'm saying we have elevated their opinions and that we give it more credence than I think it's worthy. And I say it again, it's not about athletes. Fame and wealth, and I will apply that to anybody from the highest office in this land to the lowest. Fame and wealth undermine, I think, your understanding of a lot of issues. And this is what I'll say as it relates to LeBron James and tossing on the Beto hat. And again, this, and maybe LeBron knows this, but these would be the questions I would ask LeBron. I was like, have you ever heard of a carpetbagger, LeBron? Mm. And because there's a long history of carpetbaggers. People from the North are people from a coast that go down south and they know better than the locals and what should be going on. LeBron has no connection to Texas, none. He looks like a carpetbagger. And trust me, that's what the people in the South, as he comes down and puts on a hat and throws his support behind Beto O'Rourke, like, hey man, you ain't from here. You don't know nothing about it here. You come off like one of these coastal elites or northern elites that know better than me down here in the South. And it's off-putting. And so he may think, hey, I'm throwing on this O'Rourke hat, and it's good for Beto. And Beto may have sent it to him because, again, all these guys are celebrity chasers, jersey chasers, whatever, may think it's good. But I would sit here and go, I think the people down south are like, oh, here comes another northern carpetbagger trying to tell me what I should do down here in Texas.
Tremendous point. And I don't counter that point, but I wanted to look at it from this angle. Taylor Swift, who came out recently with her political ideas and support.
Famous celebrity.
Famous, wealthy. But the baseline of what that did into a fan base, her fan base, and then it activated them to actually vote. Now, she may have activated them to unilaterally vote for what she supported, but at least she got the people out there in droves to vote. Now, LeBron James talking about something that he doesn't live in locale, but is still interested in, may drive that base, whether it's the Texas base or just his own fan base, to go out and vote. And we all know we had an issue with voting, especially in our last election. So, at bare minimum, it's going to bring some energy to something that needs to be activated.
Right. I think that at bare minimum, it just engages a conversation and has you to research who he's representing. So, and I think that engages the youth to think about these decisions and actually pay attention to the candidates and start doing their research. And just because LeBron is in line with somebody who's inclusive, he's in line with that man. Like, he may have sat down with Beto. He may have spoken to Beto. He may have done his research about Beto. I do think that if he's done something, if he wore that hat, he did his homework. His team did his homework. They are very informed about how he represents himself in public, and that he may be in line with him on some issues. Maybe not at the man in general. It's not his twin, and he thinks exactly like Beto, but it's something that he's falling in line with, that he believes in, that inclusive conversation.
And my thing about Beto, and we've given him credit for he's inclusive or has put on the appearance of inclusiveness over Twitter. And again, that's where I just get, we're all caught up. And because Twitter is ground zero for clout chasing, celebrity chasing, jersey chasing. If you want to chase, go to Twitter and chase popularity and blah. And it's just not a very deep, it's the shallowest end of the pool. And that's where I just see athletes and other celebrities, other people attracted to fame, the most famous person in America right now loves Twitter. And it's the shallowest end of the pool. And so to me, it's like everybody wants to be critical of the guy in the highest office, but they want to act just like him and do the exact same thing. It's hypocritical to me. And that's why I look at it. And again, I look at LeBron running down to Texas to have an opinion on what should go on in Texas. And to me, I just go, carpetbagger.
Well, look here. It may be the shallowest end of the pool, but that's based on your relative experience. Even the shallow end, I have a three-year-old. It's still wet, and you better know how to swim, depending on who you are, right? And there are a lot of youth who don't know a dang thing about politics. And so LeBron is talking to them who can't swim even in the shallow end. So respect to that. And two, I'll give you this example, and you've been there before. We've all went to the local school and spoke to the kids, elementary level, let's say that. And we walk in, one, two, three. You know what the ranking is in terms of reception and the volume that we speak from? You're in third place. I'm in second place, and he's in first place. Because you're a journalist, and this has nothing to do with respect. It's just, you sit there, we have Jason Whitlock. We have Marcel Swally play football. We have Dante Jones play basketball. And once you're that guy, what comes out of your mouth is going to speak volumes and at least say something. And whether it's right or wrong, he is at least saying something.
You made my point. If we all three spoke, they should listen to me the most. But everything's rigged the other direction.
It's been that way before social media, though, Jason. It's been that way. Yeah?
That's good. All right. Thank you, Dante. It's time for Tell Us Marcellus, where we put Wally on the spot with questions about some of the hot button issues of the day.
Let's start with the Lakers, who fell to 2-5 on the year after losing to the T-Wolves 124-120 last night. So far this year, LeBron has been preaching patience about his new team. But after yet another close loss, James isn't exactly sounding very patient himself.
You know, we can't have reoccurrence of the same thing. I think, you know, if you're doing the same things over and over and over and expecting a different result, then, you know, that's insanity. So, you know, we have to, we have to get better. You know, we can't keep having the same mistakes over and over. You probably don't want to be around when my patience run out. I'm serious.
All right, tell us, Marcellus, does LeBron need to be careful about dropping warnings like this?
Yeah, he definitely does, man. He has to read his situation, his circumstances. He better watch himself because he's not around what his typical team looks like, which is veterans and ring chasers. He's around a young core that wants to get it. And to that tune, the young core wanted to get it without a LeBron James before the season. Look what Kyle Kuzma said when they were having the discussion about a LeBron James and others. If guys want to come here, they come. But if not, we're not dependent on that. We want to be those great players, max level guys. We just think about how can we make the team better. So when you got a young squad like that that knows they're going to get their time, there's two things that can happen. They could form these little subgroups and start to say, you know what? We're going to get ours regardless of LeBron. We could outlast a LeBron James who's here for this 10-year, 4-year contract. And this is the same thing that happened to them with Kobe Bryant in his last couple years where they said, we'll eat it, but we're going to survive you. So Kobe still was at a place where his birth certificate said, you're not going to outlast this entire core. And I think this young core is like, all right, man, shots fired. Careful, because we can return fire in terms of our patience. Mm.
Kyle Kuzma said that in April.
Yeah.
That's before LeBron James.
Yeah. But all the smoke was LeBron James is coming to L.A., so he had to talk in code as well.
I get it. This is New Testament, though. Yeah. Old Testament and New Testament are quite different.
Right.
And so I just think Kyle Kuzma, the looks and the way LeBron has Kyle Kuzma playing and some of these other guys playing, I think LeBron knows what he's dealing with. You know, maybe Rondo, Brandon Ingram, maybe Lance Stevenson. Mm. But the rest of these guys, I think they scared of LeBron.
Well, Brandon Ingram's part of that young core. Maybe not the most vocal, but Kuzma, Lonzo, Brandon Ingram. Those are the guys that they've proven and shown that they have value to this franchise going forward forevermore. LeBron James, I don't know who that shot was directed for, if it wasn't for that young core that stepped
it up.
Luke
Walton. All right, to another guy who got impatient last night, Klay Thompson, who couldn't get the ball out of his hands fast enough, scoring 52 points in just 27 minutes and breaking Steph Curry's record by dropping 14 threes. But not everyone was super impressed with Klay's performance. His dad, Michael, was talking about it while calling the Lakers game and said, quote, 14 of 24 from three. Is that good? I would have thought someone as good as Klay could make at least 18 if he took 24 shots. All right, tell us, Marcellus. Michael Thompson having a little fun here, showing some tough love. You like it?
I love it, man. Love Michael Thompson. Man, father knows best. And he always speaks with the truth serum. Like, look, he's going to give it to you straight, uncut, dope, especially with Klay. If you look at Klay Thompson, and he can impress the world, but knowing Michael Thompson as I do, he's always looking at a way to stab Klay. Why? Because Klay is in such a protected space, third, maybe fourth fiddle up in Golden State. The team's success or failures is never on Klay Thompson. He has a $100 million sneaker deal outside of the game. And Michael Thompson, his father, despite all that success and winning a three-point championship and multiple NBA championships, had that boy on an allowance. Like, literally was like, Klay, I don't give a damn if you make $100 million a year. You having an allowance, he's always been there to kind of stab and poke at that bubble that is protecting Klay's existence up there.
It's fascinating, you being a father, and then you being a huge LeVar Ball fan, how Michael Thompson deal with his son jibe with your support of LeVar and how he deals with his son?
It's a push-pull. If you look at Michael Thompson, he's pushing Klay. Like, everyone says, oh, you're fine, you're fine. He's like, nah, I need more out of you. Where LeVar, he's going to speak it into existence, so he's going to pull Lonzo. Like, look, I said you're the best. I said you're going to be better than Steph Curry. I said you're the MVP of the league. Now I'm going to pull you in reality to the place I already spoke about. So different strokes for different folks.
Which was most effective?
Depends on the kid being respectful, but if it's just all things equal, it's the one where you push him. Let him be self-motivated, and then you come from behind and say, a little more, versus the one that's pulling them, and sometimes you drag them.
My dad was Michael Thompson. I don't know if I ever did anything right, but he loved me. He talked great about me behind my back to my face. I was terrible. All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. My favorite segment of the show, Antisocial.
Here you go.
Here we go. Darnell Smith is here, our social media manager, to walk us through what's happening on these Twitter streets.
What it do?
There's a lot going on these Twitter streets.
I got my Twitter off. I almost forgot.
Yeah.
All right, Darnell, let's get it popping.
Hit it.
We're going to start with your man, John Gruden, whose first season back in Oakland hasn't been less than inspiring. Raider Nation has been upset at Gruden's decisions to trade Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper, but now some former players are throwing some shade, too. When Super Bowl champion Martellus Bennett was asked on Twitter if he would ever play for Gruden, he replied, bleep no. Old ass needs to get back in his hot tub time machine and go back to 1992. He fails to understand the modern day athlete. I'm sure his schemes and game plans are great, however, his understanding of today's players is not. Y'all agree that Bennett, that Gruden cannot relate to current players?
Man, that seems like a lot to be saying.
A lot of shade. Too much shade.
He's going hard.
Did he play for John Gruden? Does he know John Gruden?
Cloud cover right there.
Yeah, I think he's doing a little too much here.
He's doing too much. First of all, they have the oldest roster in the NFL, so if he can't relate to them old dudes on his roster, then who can he relate to? He tried to qualify and say, look, he's calling some good plays and good schemes, but still can't relate. And I think that's just a lazy argument, can't relate. Like, I don't need to do what you do to relate to you. You know, I don't have to know the ins and outs of Twitter and video games and Fortnite to be like, yo, go run through a wall for me as your coach. So, one, I read this one, even though I'm a fan of both guys, I think he was off with his argument.
Block that backside linebacker. Do I have to be young to do it?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, moving on. Booger McFarland said something pretty funny during the Patriots and Bills game last night.
Yeah.
Take a listen.
Well, when you look at Kelvin Benjamin, guys, he's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
As expected, social media had a field day with this. We had a couple good photoshops of Benjamin catching some Popeyes, and then someone comparing him to my man, Anthony Anderson. That's just cold right
there. That's old Anthony. That
ain't new Anthony. Right, that ain't new Anthony.
Hey, Anthony lost a bunch of weight.
That ain't blackish Anthony. That ain't blackish.
That's the Anthony from The Shield. Remember his character just in The Shield?
Right. Law and Order.
Yeah. Y'all have any issue with Booger clowning Kelvin like this?
I don't. It was funny, and I'm sure Kelvin Benjamin had a good chuckle, laugh, good sense of humor about it. I've been a Popeye's biscuit away from being a sumo wrestler my whole life.
You and me both.
Oh, man. I love the fact that he said it so matter of fact. Like, he said that in his commentary. Like, it wasn't even like, all right, here's a setup for this big joke that I know. Here's the unveil. He's just like, nah, dude kind of big. And I respect that. Well, we always have this issue with Popeyes, so I ain't gonna go down that road, but that's about all you can get at Popeyes right now. Everything else done fell off to me, man. See how you
like? I ain't going there, but I will say this. They had a camera on Jason Witten when Booger said something clever, and Witten curled up in a fetal position crying damn near. Damn, I wish I had said something clever.
Boy, every time Booger gets off, Witten just sitting there like, boy.
Whitney Booger in the booth, please. He was freezing out there. Oh, all right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, moving on to a little Halloween talk.
Yeah.
This picture of a young fan dressed up as Patrick Mahomes has gone viral. Whitlock, we know we seen you spotted with the Mahomes wig in the past. So, Marcellus, you be the judge.
Okay.
Who wore it better?
Man, I hate to do this to you, Whitlock. Yeah. Little man got you, man. Hey. One, he nailed the costume, but more importantly, he nailed the look.
Like, yeah, he looked just like him.
Was it a recruiting visit to KC a little earlier than we knew? Because that... You got to check the numbers on that one, man, the birth certificate. That little dude, I mean, he is spot on with it, man.
Yeah, I think he's killing me there.
Yeah.
He's killing me there. I would have to do better. But I like the little wristbands and all that other stuff. We need to add that to my costume when I go full Mahomes. I got to get that extra stuff.
I mean, he got eyebrows. It's a lot there, Whitlock. You just got hair and a headband, man. I mean, that's cool. 99 cent store version, but little man went all in. He's like, mama, change my DNA, too.
Right.
I look like Patrick Mahomes.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, switching over to the NBA. Y'all already talked about Clay's historic game, and obviously NBA Twitter has been buzzing about it all night. Golden State was up 42 points at halftime, and Brian Windhorst had an interesting tweet about it. Check this out. I hereby give Steve Kerr permission to let his guys go for it in the second half. No judgment. Just see what they can do. If the Bulls don't want to be on the wrong end of history, let them stop the Warriors from it. Golden State did, in fact, pump the brakes in the second half. But do y'all think they should have listened to Twitter and ran up the score?
No. I don't want to see the Washington Generals and the Harlem Globetrotters, and that's what that looked like last night, and so they needed to pump the brakes.
Yeah, pump the brakes. No, I want to see that one because of potential injury, but more importantly, hey, man, we have to do 82 of these, and then we have to play the ones that actually count, that matter. So you know what? Save myself for some other great performances going forward.
Somebody's going to score 80 points this year, though. There's going to be an individual that scores 80, and maybe somebody flirts with 100. You never
know. Now, if they keep stopping them and not letting them play in the fourth quarter.
Great point.
Somebody's going to go for it.
Three quarters?
No. Somebody's going to be like, man, I got 50 at halftime. Let's see if I can get this 100. Mm. And the coach is going to let them do it.
All right,
Darnell, quickly, what's next?
Yeah, everyone on FS1 has been giving their ideas on how to fix the Cleveland Browns. And Todd Furman, he had a very interesting idea of his own. Take a listen.
Don't rule out, and I think I'll take long shot flyer when the number's available, on Bill Belichick when his contract is up in New England at the end of the season. This is a man whose ego is bigger than anyone's in the entire league. What better way for him to prove his legacy is more important than Tom Brady's than basically bringing Cleveland back from the depths?
Would y'all like to see Belichick return to the Browns?
Are the women and children safe? Because that's the hottest take I've ever heard in my life. Your hands must be scorching from even touching that take. I love Todd Furman, but Todd, yeah. Bill Belichick going back to Cleveland?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, don't misconstrue what the ego is and what it does to a person. Man, when you reach to the top of a pyramid that you actually wanted and built, why do you got to go climb another one? Like, I don't understand. Like, why am I going to Cleveland to go try and figure this out again? One, I just continue to dominate in the place I am. No.
I can't remember who said it, but this is like Snoop Dogg needs to come. This is called hustling backwards.
You don't hustle back
to Cleveland. Are you kidding me?
No.
Where every coach and every quarterback goes to die? Bill Belichick wants none of that.
No parts.
None of that. He'd rather go coach at Alabama and take over Nick Saban's program and win national titles and hustle backwards.
Or Columbia.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Rory, hey, we won this weekend. Go Yale. Take that L. Go Yale. Take that L. Look at Rory.
All right.
Thank you,
Darnell. All right. Today, we're talking former Packers running back. Yes, I did say former Packers running back, Ty Montgomery. He got traded to Baltimore today for a 7th-round pick after costing Green Bay a chance at a game-winning drive against the Rams. I've got Ty Montgomery appropriately rated as a dumpster fire. He is a full-blown dumpster fire. Job performance, I gave him a 2.
What?
All-time greatness, I gave him a 3. Character, I gave him a 15. And authenticity, a 10.
Wow.
For a total of 30. I think this may be my lowest score. This may be lower than Vontae Davis.
Yeah, that is bad right there. I mean, look, since you speak first doesn't mean you speak right and correctly. Whitlock, what the heck are you talking about? This guy's not a dumpster fire. Matter of fact, might be a pioneer in the way that he went about his business, despite starting off from obviously a tragic mistake in the game. Here's the appropriate ranking for him. He's a role player. You got to respect the guy's job performance at 8. Look,
He's third string. How can you be a job performance being 8? You third string.
You know the number 3, he started at 3 positions in the NFL. Name somebody else is doing that. Receiver, running back, and kick returner. Respect to this guy.
He's complaining about his role and playing time. He can't get on the field, but his job performance is an 8.
Wow, I never had my teammate complain to the execs about things that happen around here, have I? Okay. Character, 23 right there. You got to respect this guy for taking a high road, not selling out Coach Mike McCarthy, and leaving the locker room, and then coming back to the locker room, dealing with all the heat and the criticism.
And putting his teammates on blast.
And yeah, I want to know what's Anonymous's last name. I mean, give me some names.
Accurate is his last name.
Accurate, but 2 of them. It's 2 of them. I love that guy in authenticity, 25. He took that smoke. And he forced the trade. He said, look, if I'm going to be around a team of snitches that can't say who they are and what they're about, I'll go to Baltimore. And let's just say Baltimore's a better place to be anyway. Mm.
You got – oh, my. You caught.
You admit it.
50, no.
Green Bay or Baltimore. You got caught. Baltimore chances of playing this year, AFC versus Green Bay, NFC. I'm waiting.
Marcellus, the guy put his teammates on blast. They just got rid of him. The whole locker room's mad at him, and somehow he's the highest character, most authentic guy we've ever talked about. It's damn near a perfect score in authenticity and character, and he just got run out of the locker room.
I knocked him a couple because, look, he could have stayed there day one and talked to the reporters, but, hey, he's going where they film The Wire, your favorite show. You got to love that. Look at that.